You are Locked On Vikings, your daily Minnesota Vikings podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Locked On Vikings podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I am your host, your pal, and the kid you copied off in math class. My name is Luke Braun. You can find me on Twitter at LukeBraunNFL, and you can find the show on Twitter at Locked On Vikings. And today is Tuesday. You guys know what that means. It's Twitter Tuesday. So I got a whole bunch of questions that you sent me on Twitter, some from like Discord and email and other places, and I will get to as many of these as I possibly can. If I missed yours, I am so sorry. I either missed it because I'm on the road, and so compiling all these is a little harder, or I might get to it another time. So let me start with some questions out of Discord. The first one comes from Swimmer Calvin, who says, in the context of worrying about our rookie O-lineman, how long was it before JJ took over the wide receiver 2 from BC? I recognize that Darisaw has been hampered by injury, but is it unreasonable to think that Davis could have a similar surge as time goes on? So what happened with Justin Jefferson, if Kirk Cousins is to be believed, and I don't think he was like lying about this, is it took him about half of the season to really get things down. First two games, he wasn't starting. By week 3, he was starting, and then, of course, he had that huge game against the Titans, and it was like, okay, he's, like, for real, and he kind of broke out as this really big playmaker, but he still was, they were still kind of using him in a limited way. You remember a lot of bluster about, like, his target share? Well, he couldn't, he didn't have all the concepts down, it doesn't sound like. He didn't have the playbook fully comfortable, so he wasn't able to run all the things until, you know, halfway through the season. He was comfortable with everything. He can run the whole playbook, and that's when he really turned it on, and that's when they started targeting him, you know, 10, 11, 12 times a game. Yeah, I think it's totally reasonable to think any rookie could go through a trajectory like that. With Darisaw and Davis, both of them kind of got slowed down by injury here or there and stuff, and it's also plenty reasonable for somebody to take a Drew Samia angle. A trajectory and just never be good, and maybe that can happen with guys too, and we kind of never really know. That's sort of the struggle of all of it, isn't it? We never really know. But when it comes to rookie struggles, that a rookie is not ready week one, never really a cause for concern in its own right for me, even around one rookie that we usually kind of expect that from. I usually tend to think, look, if guys need some time to be ready, transitioning from college to the NFL is hard, I say give them time. Focus Fuller asks, is Wanham looking like the favorite for playing opposite Daniil? I know that they're doing some fun OLB things with him, but I'm curious if he has been better than Weatherly and or the rookies. So the OLB stuff he's been doing, I just kind of want to talk about real quick. So if you haven't been privy to all this, basically DJ Wanham has been moving all over the formation. It's not quite the Anthony Barr role exactly, but it's very similar in that it moves everywhere. It lines up everywhere. It's kind of unpredictable. Is he going to rush? Is he going to cover? What's he doing? He's played probably more traditional edge than anything else, but he has played some defensive tackle, some one technique. He's played some nine technique way out there. He's lined up as an offensive or as an outside linebacker, you know, in a 2-point stance, meaning standing kind of straight up and pass rushing that way, sometimes backing off into coverage that way. He's been doing a lot of weird things, and it's all been a part of exotic blitz looks and weird stuff that Mike Zimmer's doing. I think the Vikings defense is going to look weird this year, and I think Mike Zimmer has conjured something, and it's odd, and DJ Wanham seems to kind of be the linchpin of it, which kind of takes him out of that competition for being like the guy opposite Danielle Hunter. And it's kind of like he's not really part of the classic position designations as we know them anymore. And that's cool. It also means that, you know, when they are doing like a regular lineup, it might be Wanham. I think it still could be Weatherly. It still could be Patrick Jones. It probably will be a mixture of all of those guys opposite Danielle Hunter. And they're just fighting over who gets a bigger piece of the pie. You know, it's never going to be like one guy unless you have, you know, a Griffin and a Hunter and these like really established people. But it's going to be kind of a committee there, I think. And it's just a matter of, you know, who tug of war is more snaps away from each other. Stizo asks, is Etling better than Stanley? Danny Etling, the quarterback they picked up. Nate Stanley, of course, bad? And the answer is yes. I think Etling is more accurate than both Stanley and Browning, and I think the only thing holding Etling back is, you know, newness to the scheme and familiarity with the system and all that stuff. And if he can overcome that, you know, by the second preseason game or something, if he can survive that long, if he can survive, you know, the return of Kellen Mond, then maybe he can do something. But it sounds like Kellen Mond is going to be back pretty soon, so we'll probably get an answer on that. You might even know the answer on that before I do, as I'm recording this. Quickly before I move on, today's episode is brought to you by Rock Auto. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. The next question comes from Purple and Gold Sports, who asks, Dan Chisena, is he actually looking that good, and can he beat out BB? Personally, probably have to wait for some preseason games. Yeah, you answered your own question. You probably have to wait for some preseason games, of course. Here's the deal. Dan Chisena has had a pretty good couple of days of camp. And that's it. That's all that means. That doesn't mean that he's going to start. That doesn't mean that he's a shoo-in to make the roster. He's had a couple good days. He's on a pretty good streak. Hopefully, can he keep that momentum going? But he has looked good. He's found separation more often than I think he used to be able to. You know, if you're just fast, that's not good enough in the NFL. And that's what Dan Chisena was. He's just fast. Straight line speed. Corners know how to deal with that. But now he's got some releases, he's got a couple moves, and then he can kind of utilize that speed a little better. Got to get a little better at contested catches, got to, you know, get separation more consistently to be like a true wide receiver in the NFL, and that's a pretty tall thing to ask of a wide receiver, to keep getting more and more and more separation. But he has absolutely improved. Between him and Chad Beebe, I don't think they're in much conflict, except for as special teams guys, and I think that's going to be where this really is decided, and I think that comes down to preseason games. And it's been pretty back and forth between the two. Chad Beebe had a really good day on special teams today, on Monday, for example. Seth asks, who do you think is going to be our backup to Mac Alexander at the nickel position? Probably Harrison Hand. Bashaud Breeland could play nickel as well, but in terms of who has like played a lot of slot corner and stuff, I've seen a lot of Harrison Hand. Perry Nickerson could actually sneak onto the roster that way, although he has not had a very good camp. I'd be pretty surprised. But I think it'll be, you know, somebody else kind of kicks inside, and then you bring somebody else in on the outside. Before I move on a little any further, I would like to talk to you about Grambling. So the Olympics are over. I hope you guys made bank on the Olympics, betting on all that stuff on betonline.ag. If you missed out on the Olympics, you want to bet on some preseason games. The Vikings currently +1.5. Against the Broncos, if you want to get dirty with it. You can also just bet on week one against the Bengals. I think the Vikings are 3-point favorites. If you think they can beat that, go bet on the Vikings. Or bet against them. I'm not your dad. Anyways, you could go do any of that and bet on any sport you want. You can bet on reality TV, award shows, whatever, at betonline.ag. BetOnline's your one-stop shop for all things Grambling, and it is free to set up an account, and you can enter Locked On when you make your first deposit. Promo code LOCKEDON, all one word. You get a 50% welcome bonus. That means if your first deposit is, say, $500, BetOnline will match half of that and give you free play money. $250 of it in that case. They will match 50% of your first deposit if you enter promo code Locked On when you make it at betonline.ag, your online sportsbook experts. Moving on with this Twitter Tuesday mailbag, Martin P. asks, is the team against Kirk? Listening to Collar, it could be. It sounds like there could be a rift. So I don't know what Collar said about this, so I can't speak to like his reporting or whatever. It doesn't seem to me like there's much like tension on the field. Just reading body language and stuff, seems everybody still seems pretty loose to me. And if you listen to what everybody has said, of course they're all going to say the right things politically, but it's all like, you know, we're not really going to ask each other about it, and we're just focused on the football, and they're all saying the right political things. I would not default to the position that there is a rift until somebody like source reported said, source told me there is a rift, not just, you know, speculating maybe there could be blah, blah, blah. That's something maybe interesting to talk about, but I wouldn't do that until somebody is like, no, a source told me there's a rift, there's a problem. And then we talk about it then. Until then, it's all baseless speculation. Brandon Wanky asks, are you happy, in quotes, with the overall O-line competition? Do you think anyone should get first team reps above the presumed starter? If Davis, if healthy, Cole over Bradbury, anyone overtaking Ezra, when will they name winners like wide receiver 3, base linebacker, etc., outside preseason game 1, 2, 3? So, okay, that was a bunch of questions. Am I happy with the overall O-line competition? It's fine. Ezra Cleveland's had a pretty good camp. I don't think we need to replace him. Again, I'm going to be a Bradbury defender. I'm just higher on him, so I don't think... And Mason Cole, like, can't snap, so no. Cole should not get snaps over Garrett Bradbury. Maybe you give Wyatt Davis first-team reps, but he's got to make it out of the third team first, and right now he looks like he belongs among the third team. He's not dominating the third team like he should, and so he's not earning that yet. And I think Oli Udo is earning it. I think Oli Udo should get first-team reps solely. I think we can be done with this rotation. Dakota Dozier's getting blown out. And I think every day that Dakota Dozier continues to get first-team reps, I get a little more scared that they're going to blow it. But that's the only change I would make to, like, the way the Vikings are approaching this. And in terms of when they name winners of all the position battles and stuff, they don't, like, name it. But I guess the first depth chart for week one, like, who starts week one is really the actual full official answer, like, first play week one, who's out there. Connor Keach asks, how's our safety depth looking? Sort of worried about an injury to Woods or Smith being catastrophic. Any flashes from Cameron Bynum? Bynum's been pretty good. He definitely does not look out of place. He is really good. He's been good at, like, you know, contesting catches. I mean, he has cornerback skills there. He just makes a few too many communication errors, and he's still learning the position. But I think if he had to come in, and Josh Metellus has actually had a reasonable couple of days, and I think he comes in and kind of makes the team as the fourth guy. One of those two guys can come in, and you can limp with it. It would not obviously be ideal. It's not the best backup situation, but I don't think it's like a death knell or anything. Frederick Lane asks, how are Mike Hughes and the other old Vikings players doing? I'll just answer Mike Hughes. There's a lot of old Vikings, so I'll just answer Mike Hughes. Apparently he's starting nickel for the Chiefs. Pretty cool. Trubisky's Burner asks, how many of the Vikings record-breaking 15-man of 2020 draft class will be on the final 53? So let's count this off. You have Jefferson, that's one. No, got me. Cleveland 2, Cameron Dantzler 3, DJ Wonnum 4, we'll give you Troy Dye, but not James Lynch, so that's 5. On the you got KJ Osborne is 6, Harrison Hand, I think he makes the team, that's 7. And then of the 6th rounders, who are the 6th rounders? Okay, Josh Metellus, I think he makes the team, that's 8. Blake Brandel, maybe? Let's not give it to Blake Brandel, although I think it's a decent chance with Oli Udo moving out of the tackle spots and into the interior, you're going to have a fourth tackle spot open, and I think that might be Blake Brandel's, who's had a pretty good camp. So, I don't know, we'll say 8 or 9, and then I don't think you get any of the 7th rounders. Willekes, I don't think so. Nate Stanley, no. Brian Cole's gone. Kyle Hinton, no. So 9, 8 or 9, depending on how you feel about Blake Brandel making the team. That ain't bad. If you had a draft, if you had a normal draft, and you had 9 people making the team from it the next year, like, of a normal draft, maybe you had, like, a couple extra 7th, right? You basically have to go, like, 100% to get, like, that clip. So I think the 15 record-breaking strategy thing is working insofar as, like, if you compare it to a normal draft, it would be really hard for a normal draft to, like, get that many players to, like, be successful insofar as making the roster. 7790 Skull says, should I be hyped about Kene, or is this just another Mike Boone situation again? One of my favorite recent Vikings was McKinnon because of his home run ability, especially in 2017. Could that role exist again, or is Cook just too good to allow room for anyone else? So, look, Cook is going to get most of the carries because he's Dalvin Cook. Yeah, so he, to a degree, is too good to, like, give anybody a major role or anything. But Wangwu is good. He seems good, and it seems like they're doing, like, jet sweeps to him and stuff, and they're using his speed in a way that they didn't really use Mike Boone's. And it seems like he has a more natural feel for the position than Mike Boone did. Mike Boone was a wide receiver convert. He didn't really know what he was looking at. And I think that's really, like, apparent in his tape too. Like, it was difficult for him to kind of find creases and holes, and he was hesitant, and he was making the wrong read a lot of the time. And that kind of kept him off the field. But here's the deal. If it is just another Mike Boone situation, I don't know if that is good enough for a 4th-round pick, but that's still, like, Mike Boone is pretty fun. Like, that's fun to have in your roster still, so I think you can still, like, be excited about that if you want. I got a few more questions I want to go into today, but first I want to talk to you about your car. It's hot out. Make sure you are taking care of your car. If you're a do-it-yourself type, maybe you're a gearhead, maybe you just want to learn how to change your oil, save a buck instead of taking it into the mechanic, watch some YouTube videos, but you got to make sure you get your supplies from the right place. Head on over to rockauto.com for that. You can get supplies that you know are compatible with your car. Enter your make, your year, and your model, and Rock Auto sorts all that out for you, so you're getting parts that are right for your car, but you're getting them cheaper. And they're not cheaper versions of the parts. They're the same parts. You're just buying directly from the manufacturer. Cut out the middleman at the brick-and-mortar auto shop. They're upselling you because you're a retail customer anyways. Head on over to rockauto.com and get your car parts there instead. You can get motor oil. You can get supplies like jumper cables or a tire kit or something like that. And you can get, gaskets and more complicated stuff if you're a true black thumb. And when you check out, there is a How You Heard About Us section. Make sure you let them know that Locked On sent you, because if you don't, the bunnies will hunt man for sport. Rock Auto, amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Let's keep going with this Twitter Tuesday mailbag here on the Locked On Vikings podcast. James Kuanu asks, asks, does Darisaw have enough time between now and week one to take over the LT1 role, or does he have to have a steep hill to climb to take it from Hill? Pun intended, but proud of it. Proud of you, James. Yeah, it's tough. It's difficult to do in this amount of time, considering the time that he's missed. But I would say the way that Rashad Hill has played, tough to evaluate because he's going up against Danielle Hunter a lot, and Danielle Hunter's ridiculous. But I don't think we have to panic about that. If he has to, maybe take two more weeks until he's ready, and maybe he won't be ready, and maybe he's got to, take a little time. It's rookie stuff. That's the way this kind of goes. Every year, the rookies are going to, some of them are ready to start week one, some aren't. And for the ones that aren't, sometimes guys are Justin Jefferson, and that just kind of has to be okay. But yeah, it would be pretty tough. He would have to be really, really excellent right away to beat out Rashad Hill, who is making it difficult. I mean, part of that is Rashad Hill playing decently, and you can't just be a halfway okay starter to beat Rashad Hill. He's kind of providing a standard that's worth beating. Forrester asks, there's the obvious things like muffing a punt as a returner or whiffing a tackle as a gunner, but what else makes one particularly bad at special teams? So when I'm looking at special teams, when I'm looking at guys who catch punts or kicks, I'm looking at the smoothness of it. How much do they have to adjust? Because I think part of punt returning, a really difficult part of punt catching is placing yourself. Did you step too far forward and now you got to catch it up by your face? That's going to cause fumbles later. Did you not quite set yourself up perfectly, or does it fall right in the breadbasket super easily, smooth, and that's all great? Because there's no tackling, it's difficult to evaluate how well they can, make guys miss tackles or stuff. That's going to be what the preseason games are for. And that's kind of why Dan Chisena fooled Marwan Maloof and all the Vikings coaches, because he was great in the drills. And then when it came to actually tackling, breaking down, making the play on the guy and having the fundamentals there, he wasn't good at that part. And we didn't ever get to stress test that part in a preseason game. So we didn't get to find out that he was bad at that part until we were playing meaningful football, and that kind of sucked. But I think, you got to be in the right lane. When you're covering a kickoff, everybody has their lane. Everybody has their gap. There's their responsibility. And if you abandon that because you're trying to play hero or something, that's a mistake you can't make. If you run too fast or too slow and you don't quite have the timing right, if you kind of open up your gap and cede it for whatever reason, then, that'll get you in trouble with the coaches, that kind of thing. And when it comes to the returning, it's hard to measure who has juice and stuff. Usually I'm just looking for who catches it the cleanest. And for my money, Osborne's been good. Smith-Marset's been good there. Abdullah's always been really solid there. And those are the guys that have kind of stood out to me at those return positions. Although, again, you kind of have to split hairs at that one. Adam Feist asks, how many players from this year's draft class do you expect to make the final 53? Okay, let's count them off. Of course, Darisaw. That's easy. You have Kellen Mond. That's easy. You can all those third round picks. We'll just call them so that you got five guys there. Mond, Wyatt Davis, Chaz Surratt, and Patrick Jones. We'll just say those guys are all automatic. Fourth round picks, usually automatic. I think they have to make the roster for whatever it's worth. I think Cameron Bynum is making the roster easily. I think Wang Wu is making a roster easily. Those two guys are actually having decent camps. And then Janarius Robinson is having a dreadful camp, but I don't think the Vikings should expose him to waivers, not just because of the pedigree, but he's just so athletic. I don't think it would be wise to expose him to waivers. So there's those two. There's Amir Smith-Marset. I think he's making a roster. I know Zimmer said something weird, but I think he's making a roster. There's a question about that later too. So I think you can kind of count on him. And then you have Zach Davidson and Jalen Twyman. Jalen Twyman, we'll just say, doesn't count for now. Of course, you know, he's going to be on the kind of NFI list for until he recovers from being shot four times. And then we'll kind of play it from there. Zach Davidson is difficult. I just don't see it. He is really, really struggling to consistently beat third teamers. And I think he will play poorly enough in the preseason to be safe to expose to waivers. So we'll say no for Zach Davidson. So that gives me Darisaw, five after the third round, all three fourth rounders. That's eight, and then nine coming in there. Again, yeah, pretty good tally. If all nine of those guys make the team next year, then I think we're doing great. And the next question, as I teased, comes from Mitchell Dykstra. Says, thoughts on ISM having to do more to crack the roster? Does Blake Prohl have a better chance at this point? Second question first, no. Blake Prohl does not have a better chance at the roster than Amir Smith-Marset. He has a decent chance, Blake Prohl, at the roster. He's pushing, but he's pushing for a spot that, you know, Chad Beebe and Dan Chisena would give up. Amir Smith-Marset is currently wide receiver four on the depth chart. He is taking the fourth reps. So he's, you know, the wide receiver two on the second team is one way to put it. Behind KJ Osborne. I think he's like the next guy. And I don't know where D.D. Westbrook slots in because he hasn't done any wide receiver stuff. But so I think he's going to be fine. But the quote, I didn't actually listen to the quote, but I think the gist of the quote was, hey, you know, Smith-Marset's doing great. He did really well on offense, but he's got to do more on special teams. And then kind of a grander point about how if you're a backup, you kind of have to be on special teams to make the team. And Smith-Marset was struggling on special teams, so he's got to get better at that. And that was kind of what Mike Zimmer said. But I think, you know, it's maybe a little motivation, a little kick in the pants, maybe. That's kind of a thing Zimmer likes to do, so maybe it was something like that. But I don't think Smith-Marset's in too much danger. Mike Lofgren asks, is Oli Udoh the left guard who was promised, right guard, I assume you mean, possible to review some past season training camp narratives and how they played out as a way to understand whether this year's storyline should or can be believed, or Smith, KJ, Udoh, etc.? So I wouldn't look at past training camp narratives too much because those are different guys, right? Like, oh, Laquan Treadwell had that one really good training camp and then he sucked again. And is this KJ Osborne? Well, no, because Laquan Treadwell isn't KJ Osborne. They're different dudes, different skill sets, maybe winning for different reasons. And you have, like, I don't know, Oli Udoh, he seems a lot like a Mike Harris situation, but he's not Mike Harris, he's Oli Udoh. And look, Oli Udoh has played well in training camp. He hasn't played perfectly. I don't think he will be a good right guard, but he'll maybe be an average one, or maybe a below average one, but maybe that's all we need. But I think he can win the job, and that's what training camp can tell you. Training camp can tell you who's going to win the job. I don't know how good it is at telling you who will be good in the season. I think it does okay at it. You can kind of strip, you can extract some things, but it's like just okay at that. It's really good at telling you who's going to get the job. And that's what I like to kind of cover. So I think Oli Udoh ends up with the job. I'd be pretty surprised if he didn't end up with the job. If Dozier ends up with the job over Udoh after what we said, barring a preseason game disaster, I'd actually be pretty upset about that. Hey, he's played okay. Maybe this is a Mike Harris type situation, or maybe it doesn't work out and it's more of a Mike Remmers type situation. You know, let's get in some live games and let's see what happens there. And the joint practices and the preseason games will, you know, after the first preseason game, kind of everything that happened in camp looks really small, and the preseason game is now the major information that you have. Dane Swanson asks, if you had to bet the Rabbits college tuition on one camp hype train coming good in the regular season, which would it be? So I would bet $600,000 on Ezra Cleveland. He's had a really good camp, and he seems like a totally different player. Seems like moving back to the left side was really big for him, and now he can just get the guard footwork down. And in general, you know, they seem to be really good with just having tall tackles, and they'll all have reach advantages on the interior, and I guess we can just use that. And not for, you know, lack of competition, too. Dalvin Tomlinson and Michael Pierce and Sheldon Richardson, who sat out on Monday. I don't know what that was about. But those guys have really made it hard. There are some really tough bull rushes, some really, really, really powerful looking moves, nasty stuff. And these guys have held their own up there. So maybe the guards will be a little better, and that would be all right. I mean, KJ Osborne winning the wide receiver three job, I think, is a lock. I don't know if he'll be a good wide receiver three, but he will be the wide receiver three. And the last question comes from Cheesy, who asks, I know trap games are hard to predict, but could you see us losing any trap games this coming season? Seems to happen once or twice a year. Sure, yeah, random upsets happen, and the Vikings are just as susceptible to it as anybody else. Kirk Cousins is, I think, a little more resilient to upsets than other team. I mean, he's just really good against bad teams and really bad against good teams. That's kind of the whole thing. And again, it's like, of course, frustrating that, you know, he seems to fall apart when the competition gets a little better. And like the difference between how other quarterbacks play against bad teams versus against good teams, Kirk Cousins is exacerbated, right? Like the difference between a good team and a bad team is bigger for Kirk Cousins than it is for other quarterbacks. This isn't just normal. Well, of course, it's harder against a good team. It's like more difficult for Cousins specifically. But that means when you get up against a bad team, you rarely blow it. There's not a lot of things like the 2018 Bills game. Like that is kind of an outlier. That's way easier to remember. But for every Bills game, there's 10,000 games against the Detroit Lions that they won, you know, 27-14 that you totally forgot because they were boring. And so in terms of what the trap game would be, probably that Lions game, the home Lions game is always, you know, if they're reeling and they're, you know, winless and the Vikings need it and maybe the Vikings coming off a couple of big wins or something like that, maybe that could happen. But a part of a trap game too is usually you're coming off of a monumentous win, and I can't predict which games are going to be the close ones. Anything could be a close game. So I don't know, but man, something with the Lions, maybe something with the Panthers game, maybe the Panthers, I don't think are going to be very good, but this is basically me just kind of predicting who the weakest opponents are, not necessarily predicting who the trap games will be. But look, upsets can always happen. You know, we play, take every game by game. And you know, that's why we play them. So I will talk to you all tomorrow. I'll give you a little bit more insight over what I've kind of seen in the last week at camp. Of course the Broncos are coming into town soon, so can't wait to break all that stuff down with you. And then we got a preseason game this weekend. So we're getting closer to real football, everybody. Can't wait to talk about it with you. In the meantime, check out Locked On Bets. They'll get you grambles straight and get you betting on the right things with your boy Q, handicapping expert Lee Sterling. They'll take care of you. Find that wherever you find your favorite shows. As for me, you can find me on Twitter at LukeBraunNFL. And the show is on Twitter at Locked On Vikings. I'll see y'all tomorrow. And as always, Skull.